Who's watching the score? Bill Mazur. Weeknights at 5 on the big voice of Big Town USA, WNBC, New York.
NBC Monitor News on the Hour brought to you by Whitman Chocolates, the one gift no one ever exchanges. Here is David Rush.
Congressman John Bell Williams announced today he'll be a candidate for governor of Mississippi. Williams is the Democrat who was stripped of his House seniority for supporting Republican Barry Goldwater in the 1964 presidential election. The 48-year-old lawmaker is known as a segregationist, but in his formal announcement, he avoided any direct mention of the race angle. He did, however, pledge to work to preserve state rights and resist what he called all unwarranted encroachments against our constitutionally reserved rights. Williams' entry makes Mississippi's race for governor a six-way contest, which includes former Governor Ross Barnett. Baseball immortal Dizzy Dean also is considering becoming a candidate. A fire in a residential hotel in Joliet, Illinois, has killed at least 6 persons and injured 9 others. 3 of the injured are reported in critical condition. All of the dead were found in their rooms by firemen after the blaze was brought under control. Firemen had been prevented by flames from getting up a stairway to the hotel rooms. 2 of the 29 residents of the hotel are unaccounted for. More news after this for Whitman.
There are a lot of things a guy could give a girl for Valentine's Day.
Let's see, does Julie wear a size 8 sweater or is it 18? Maybe I'll split the difference. I'll miss.
I can't tell whether that flower pot looks like a frog or that frog looks like a flower pot, but I like it. I'll take it.
Just look at those jewels. That sweet bird of mine will sure turn on when she sees those. Ooh-wee. Ma'am, I'll have that emerald-studded motorcycle bell. Gift-wrapped.
This Valentine's Day, have a heart. Give her the one gift no one ever exchanges. A Whitman heart. Whitman's has been making the world's favorite chocolate since before you were born. Now there are more of her favorites in the widest selection of Whitman hearts ever. Please her with a heart made brighter with colorful foils, flowers, or bows. Or treat her to a Whitman sampler. For the one gift no one ever exchanges, trust a Whitman's.
Once again, David Rush.
James Hoffa's attorneys have asked the U.S. Supreme Court for the second time to review the Teamster president's jury tampering conviction. The High Court on December 12th rejected Hoffa's first appeal. Hoffa faces an 8-year prison sentence. American and South Vietnamese military officials charged the communists violated ceasefire more than 300 times. 17 U.S. servicemen were killed and 126 wounded during communist-initiated incidents. For a report on the U.S. position to a possible truce extension, to George Page, NBC News, Saigon.
Informed sources in Saigon indicate the United States has not yet made a decision to resume military activity at the end of the current ceasefire. Yesterday, U.S. spokesman here went to considerable lengths to leave the impression with newsmen that there was no possibility of extending the truce. Now, official spokesman refused comment when asked if the United States will resume offensive actions when the truce expires. American officials in Saigon would not comment on why they suddenly changed their emphasis when talking with newsmen about a possible extension of the truce. George Page, NBC News, Saigon.
Chancellor Kurt Kiesinger today said no one could force West Germany to sign a treaty preventing the spread of nuclear weapons. He said his country would abide by its conscience. Kiesinger referred to remarks which Soviet Premier Alexei Kosygin reportedly made in London on Thursday. Kosygin was quoted as saying the Bonn government must sign a non-proliferation treaty, whether it wants it or not. More in a moment.
We'd like to let you in on something. Now, there are two true cigarettes. First, True Blue, America's most talked about filter cigarette, with an average yield of 12.9 milligrams tar, 0.8 milligrams nicotine. Now, there are two true cigarettes. Now more than ever. Shouldn't your brand be True?
Communist China, which is engaged in a bitter dispute with Russia, turned its wrath toward the United States for a moment today. It charged the United States with violating Chinese airspace 9 times between Wednesday and Friday and labeled President Johnson an imperialist monster. The charge was in the Red Chinese Army newspaper in an article signed Commentator, which generally is a pseudonym for a high-ranking communist official. In that Sino-Soviet dispute, top leaders of the Peking regime led a rally of 100,000 supporters of Mao Zedong in denouncing the Kremlin leadership as traitors to communism and allies of U.S. imperialism. Radio Peking says Chinese soldiers in Shanghai, which is controlled by pro-Mao forces, are prepared to fight Russian troops on Chinese soil if the Kremlin dares impose a war on China. David Rush, NBC News, Washington.
Listen again on the hour when True Filter Cigarettes brings you NBC Monitor News. What ho there, Gene Rayburn here with Monitor 67, the all-in-one program for one and all. News, guests, comedy, sports, travel, music, and to put it accurately, if ungrammatically, that ain't all. This is All, the tune about to be played by Skitch Henderson. It's his latest.
There are a lot of things a guy could give a girl for Valentine's Day.
Let's see. Does Julie wear a size 8 sweater or is it 18? Maybe I'll split the difference. I'll miss.
I can't tell whether that flower pot looks like a frog or that frog looks like a flower pot, but I like it. I'll take it.
Just look at those jewels. That sweet bird of mine will sure turn on when she sees those. Ooh-wee. Ma'am, I'll have that emerald-studded motorcycle bell. Gift-wrapped.
This Valentine's Day, have a heart. Give her the one gift no one ever exchanges, a Whitman heart. Whitman's has been making the world's favorite chocolate since before you were born. Now there are more of her favorites in the widest selection of Whitman hearts ever. Please her with a heart made brighter with colorful foils, flowers, or bows. Or treat her to a Whitman sampler. For the one gift no one ever exchanges, trust a Whitman's.
If you listen very carefully, you may hear my guest at Radio Central breathing deeply and with good reason. This is the time of year that's a sort of breathing spell for him. He's Lester Lannan, one of the most successful providers of music for the big society functions, among them the various debutante balls. Nice to see you again, Lester.
Nice to be here.
Take a deep breath. There he is. We call this a breathing spell for you, Lester, because we know you've been busy right through the fall debutante season, and then the holidays came along.
It's true.
Then you get another onslaught of parties at that time. Now, let's talk about the debutante balls for a second, if we can. We've heard, they have critics of the debutante balls. Some of them call them cattle auctions, which I think is a rather crude expression. You don't look at it that way, do you?
I should say not.
Mm-hmm. But if that isn't their purpose, what is their purpose?
Well, I don't know all the reasons, I suppose. These girls, first of all, they're entertained since they've been 12 years old. They go to many, many parties. So eventually they give one party to return all their obligations.
Mm-hmm.
That's for a private debut. Now, for an international party or a subscription dance like the Grosvenor Ball or the Junior League Ball or something, they're really charitable.
Mm-hmm.
They have charitable intent. Then again, they meet lots of girls, they meet lots of men. And personally, I think everything is relative. You can have lots of fun on 11th Avenue, you can have lots of fun on Park Avenue. It's just that the environment you're in, really, that's mm-hmm. all it amounts to.
Mm-hmm. You've played, I guess, at the biggest debutante balls in the world, haven't you?
Well, I'm very grateful to say we've had our share.
What would you say, in your experience, has been the most opulent one you've ever...
Well, that's a question, if you don't mind, Gene, that's a good question. But if I said this and this party, then tomorrow I'm going to get about 8 calls and say, what's the matter, Lester? Wasn't my party good enough for you?
Really?
So I think it's best to say with all sincerity that I'm terribly grateful to the Society of America. They've been wonderful to me. I love them, and that's my livelihood. I love it. They treat me great. I love to play for them, so I don't think I better get in touch with them.
You're a pretty diplomatic and straightforward fellow there. Having attended so many of these parties through the years, without mentioning names or the specific places, maybe you could tell us some amusing incidents or something crazy that might have happened or something accidental.
Well, that's another thing you could put your foot in, too.
No names, please.
Not too many things happen. These parties are always good fun. A very successful party is when people know one another. I've attended parties, without mentioning names, about 1,200 people. Very expensive parties, terribly lucrative parties. And I'd go over to one of the men who'd passed the bag and say, having fun, Joe or Mr. Smith? Ah, no, Lester, gee, it's not good. And I say, what's the trouble? I don't know a soul here.
Mm.
In other words, a successful party is much more successful, in other words, is when people know one another.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another ingredient.
Does anybody ever try to crash any of these big parties?
Yes, they do, but they have such wonderful surveillance that it's hardly possible today.
Mm-hmm.
The other day, I went up to St. Regis Roof, and in order to get to the band entrance, you go up to the 19th floor, take the elevator, then walk up.
Mm-hmm.
When I walked in, two men grabbed me. Where you going? I said, I'm the orchestra leader. So, oh, I'm sorry.
That's a likely story. You don't look like an orchestra leader to me.
So, in other words, no one would have gotten in, really.
Lester Lannon, pleasure to see you again.
Thank you so much for having me here, Gene. Thank you.
I like the way it tastes.
I agree. There's nothing like a lark.
Lark has a good, easy taste.
Lark has an inner chamber of charcoal granules for a taste people really like.
I think they're the nicest cigarette there is.
Right. There's nothing like a lark.
There is nothing like a lark. It's America's most popular new cigarette.
14 minutes before the hour, and of course something else you should know and probably do is that we're all on the monitor beacon.
This is your NBC station. This is the pulse of the nation. For news and music, for topical news into NBC.
Yes, topical news on monitor in NBC, and not just the top of the topical, but news in depth, news features, news specials, too. Tomorrow evening, for example, in the second Sunday series, NBC News will present a 55-minute program titled Red China, The Struggle for Power. Host Wells Hangen, NBC News Hong Kong, and newsmen John Rich in Tokyo and Kenneth Bernstein in Moscow will probe and evaluate the momentous developments in Red China and include a background study of Red China's communist heritage as well as its present relations with other communist countries and the rest of the world. No one who wants to keep informed on developments which may affect us all can afford to miss this program. That's Red China, The Struggle for Power, tomorrow evening on NBC Radio over most of these same stations. Hey, make a note of this, too. Earlier, there'll be a full-hour version of Meet the Press with William Manchester, author of the controversial book, The Death of a President. Now, Monitor resumes its progress through Saturday, and we step along to the music of the Ray Charles Singers.
I step. For you step. a-setting my trap for you. Step by step, you did just what I knew you'd do. Then, one day, I got caught like I thought you'd be. For step by step, you were one step ahead of me.
On Monitor, Arlene Francis, brought to you by Brock's, the people who bring you delicious candies fresh from Brock's Candyland. Here's Arlene.
In just 1 minute, I'll be talking with the number one homemaker in the United States, Joy Nuffer, Mrs. America. But first, I just want to tell you that the giving of candy, fine candy, has long been associated with Valentine's Day, and I just can't think of a better gift for the love of your life than one of Brock's, B-R-A-C-H-S, Brock's special heart-shaped Valentine boxes of fine, pure chocolates. Believe me when I tell you that Brock's Valentine heart boxes are simply beautiful. Exquisite ribbon and lace form the heart outline of Brock's Deluxe Valentine chocolates, and in the center is a gorgeous crowning rose nestled in an array of gold-striped ribbon and gilded leaves. And oh, the luscious candies inside. Chocolate-covered creams and nut meats and almond toffees and vanilla-filled sticks. Well, I could just go on and on. It's really a magnificent gift. And this Brock's Lace and Flower Valentine Heart Box in the 2-pound size usually sells for $5.50. Should you also have several smaller gifts to give, I'd like to suggest Brock's 1-pound, half-pound, or quarter-pound heart boxes. They're at your favorite store, too, and she'll love you for your good taste. Joy Nuffer, your home planning ability won you first place in the interior design contest at the Mrs. America pageant, and your cooking was graded as excellent. That's pretty nice. Do you really enjoy everyday cooking?
Oh, I love it. That's my favorite part of homemaking.
Were you an economics major?
Heavens no, I couldn't boil water when I got married.
Do you have any special way of organizing your kitchen?
No, I'm afraid I'm sort of a haphazard cook. I think when you really love to cook and spend an awful lot of time at it, organization isn't the most important part.
Yes, I think that the truth is that that's where the grain of salt comes in.
Ah, you're
it?
Right.
Yes. Mrs. Nuffer, I understand that festival cake is a specialty of yours. Do you want to share the secret with us of how you put it together?
Oh, I'd love to. You put chopped dates, actually, and then walnuts and cocoa, and stir this all into the batter, and you put it in a large loaf pan and top it with chocolate chips, which melt as it bakes and makes a real yummy topping. And then you put whipped cream on top of that after it's all done.
Uh-huh.
So it's a very fattening, calorie-laden dessert. But
I would like to say that Mrs. Nuffer is a young and beautiful girl, and I don't think she eats much of that dessert herself.
I do.
Do you do all the cooking at home, or does your husband help you out?
He barbecues.
Uh-huh.
And is excellent.
He's an outdoor cook.
Oh, yes. Not indoor at all.
Do you organize your household chores in any way? You can't be haphazard about that.
Well, I really do.
Do you?
In the mornings, I get everything out of the way that has to be done, such as the washing and the... I don't iron. I hate to iron. But the general organizing of making the beds and straightening up, I like it neat looking. And then if I have a special project for the day, I tackle that.
Uh-huh.
And anything I have to do outside of the home, I try to do before my children get home from school.
Now, how about your children? How many do you have?
I have three. I have two boys, 10 and 11, and a girl, 8.
Well, the girl, 8, I think, will probably be the homemaker, not the two boys. But you haven't started to train her in any way yet, have you?
Oh, yes, I have.
Have you?
Yes. Well, she can make her bed and mine as well, and does, as a rule. I can't say every day, but almost every day. And she sets the table for me every night, and she cooks a few little things.
Well, how good for her, and good for you for having taught her. Very important for a mother. Thank you, Mrs. Nufa. This is, of course, Joy Nufa, our Mrs. America today. And I just want to say that with Cupid around the corner, the perfect gift in good taste for the gal in your life is definitely one of Brock's, B-R-A-C-H-S, Brock's Valentine Heart Boxes of fine, pure chocolates. They're beautifully decorated, and the Deluxe 2-pound box is usually $5.50. For smaller gifts, give 1-pound, half, or quarter-pound boxes, too. Brock's Valentine Heart Boxes. She'll love you for it.
That she will. That she will. Arlene Francis, that was, brought to you by Brock's, B-R-A-C-H-S, Brock's Candies, fresh from Brock's Candyland. Bob Crew Generation, one of the oddly named musical groups that are so popular these days with listeners of all generations, and you heard them on monitor, in northeastern Pennsylvania over WBRE Wilkes-Barre. This is evenly named Gene Rayburn, and the odds are much better than even that if you stay where you are, you'll hear from me again shortly.
Henry Morgan here. Starting tomorrow, I'll be Monitor's new Sunday afternoon host on NBC Radio.
Gene Rayburn, old friend, willing to admit that the phrase "summertime and the living is easy" doesn't fit this season of the year, but with Bob Newhart, Jerry Vale, Connie Francis, and Joe Garagiola to be heard from in this half hour, I can say it's monitor time and life is groovy, from the song of the same name by the United States Double Quartet.
Sleep in jail. Life is groovy.
Groovy.
walk and I ride the whales, keep moving soft. I sleep in parks and I sleep in jails. Life is groovy.
Groovy.
I'm free, a happy song, and then I'll just be on my way. On my way. I'll go along to another lesson. I'll sing a happy song, and then I'll just be on my way.
By the bag or by the box, your best candy buy is Brock. Fresh from Brock Candyland, really fresh.
Next time you shop, look for Brock's Winter Carnival of Candies display, featuring Brock's chocolate-covered peanuts, chocolate stars, and bridge mix, all made with Brock's own finest pure chocolate.
B-R-A-C-H-S, Brock's.
You know, despite the grimness of war, the life of a soldier, especially when viewed in retrospect, often contains a number of humorous moments. So for the benefit of this generation's soldiers in particular, Monitor on Stage presents Bob Newhart's very funny restaging of early American history.
More and more jobs in the Army are being eliminated by the machine. There is one job that they will never eliminate in the Army through the machine, and that is the job of the foot soldier. And as long as they can't replace him, they're never going to be able to replace the griper. We've always had gripers. We had the griper in the Korean War, had him in World War II, in World War I, in the Civil War. And it stands to reason that we must have had gripers in the Revolutionary Army. And I thought it might be kind of interesting to imagine what a griper in the Revolutionary Army might have been like. And I think he might have been like this. You hear what Nutty George pulled last night? The dollar across Potomac, you didn't hear about that? You know, he had us out till 3 a.m. looking for the thing. We finally get back to the barracks about 3 o'clock in the morning. You know what time I finally got to sleep? 5. Yeah. There's some nut flashing a light on and off in the church tower all night. Then the minute he quits, this drunk goes riding through town screaming. Remember we were marching the other day? And I had those shoes on that are 2 sizes too small for me. I've been trying to turn in the quartermaster for the last 3 weeks. And, you know, I kept kind of favoring this right leg all the time, you know? And, who was it? Harry had the flag and Al was blowing flute or something like that. I don't know. Finally, you know, I get back to the barracks. I'm soaking my feet. Sergeant walks in. He says, Washington caught it. He likes the idea of the limp, and I should leave it in. Oh, we got some real winners on our side. What do you think of Benny? Yeah, George's friend, Benny. Yeah, Franklin, the one with the square glasses, you know? There's a real flip on you. You've heard what he does for kicks, haven't you? Next time we have a thunderstorm, watch him. Oh, then the crowning touch. Remember, we're going across the Delaware in the boat. Ice on either side, right? Dead of the night. Who do you suppose gets up and walks to the front of the boat and stands in the front of the boat? Nutty George, sure. And then the guy in the other boat painting him, how about him?
Well, if some school could get Bob Newhart to take over the American History Department, I doubt if they've ever have a student cutting class. It'd be standing room only right through the semester.
There is nothing like a lark. It's America's most popular new cigarette.
Have a lark, have a lark, have a lark today.
I like the taste. Simple as that.
Have a lark, have a lark, have a lark today.
I think everybody who smokes should try a lark.
There's nothing like a lark.
Lark has an inner chamber of charcoal granules for a taste people really like.
Have a lark, have a lark, have a lark today.
Great smoke, glad I changed.
Hey, there's nothing like a lark.
Have a lark today.
There is nothing like a lark. Have one.
Monitor Music now, and the title of this newest from Jerry Vale sounds like one of those newspaper ads known as personals. Have you seen the girl I love go by? The answer is no, Jerry, but sing anyway.
She left me for a stranger. His sweet talk and fancy words did change her. I told her he'd leave her broken hearted. I told her I'd find her when they parted. Back so gladly.
Which great inventor was born on this date, February 11th? Who? Now, I'll give you a hint. He was responsible for the phonograph and the motion picture projector, just to name two of his inventions. See the light yet? Yeah? No, that's not the one. Someone keeps calling the name through the glass here, and he's wrong. Take another minute. We'll give you the answer then, right here in the Monitor Beacon.
Make your play. Call sportscaster Bill Mazur, weeknights at 5, on the big voice of Big Town USA, WNBC, New York.
Hi, this is Brad Crandall. Listen to me on WNBC, the big voice of Big Town USA, weeknights after the 9 o'clock news, as I keep you in touch with Big Town, actually the first capital of the new nation, where George Washington was inaugurated President of the United States in 1789. Big Town, USA.
Operation Schoolmate sends the gift of education to needy students abroad. You and your classmates in this country can build and supply schools overseas by sending your dollars to Operation Schoolmate, Care, New York 10016. Attention, Jewish couples. Be a foster parent or Jewish child. Board is paid. Please call MU97900 today.
Everywhere, listen to NBC.
And they hear NBC's monitor and me, Gene Rayburn, and the name of the inventor who is responsible for the phonograph, the motion picture projector, and the incandescent light bulb. Well, you guessed it. Thomas Alva Edison. Born 120 years ago today, and today, at Greenfield Village in Michigan, students and teachers are participating in the International Edison Birthday Celebration and Science Youth Day, and visiting Edison's Menlo Park Laboratory there. Another visitor, monitor reporter Don Perry, who spoke with a man who's been at the laboratory since 1929, Mr. Charles Natzel.
Mr. Natzel, what was Edison's first patent?
Actually, his first patented invention was, when he was 21 years old in 1868, was the voting machine that we're using today. And here we have one of the old instruments that he made. And the way this operated, they could just vote yes or no on it, and then the machine would record the votes.
Were they all in favor of this, happy to see it?
No, the people that he had invented for didn't think much of it, and he demonstrated it to them. They told them, they said, if there's anything they didn't want a voting machine because they didn't want their votes recorded by a machine. They didn't think the machine would be accurate enough.
What did he concentrate on after this voting machine?
And after he didn't have no success with this, the next year he came up with this instrument, the Golden Stock Ticker. He went to work for the Western Union Telegraph Company in their factory where they were building Golden Stock Tickers. And while he was working there, he got some ideas of his own, and he had them patented. And the Western Union Telegraph Company, they bought the patent from him for $40,000 at the age of 22.
And what is this strange-looking apparatus here?
This, Edison invented this in 1875, and this was called the Edison Electric Pen. Here you have the wet cell batteries that he used to operate the pen. He'd drop those plates down in that acid, and that would operate this pen. You would write with it at the bottom here that has the needle that dots in and out, and you wrote that needle would punch tiny holes in the paper. You'd make a stencil, actually. And after you had your stencil made, then you could run off as many copies as you wanted to. You could run off as high as 5,000, 10,000 if you wanted to, as long as the stencil held out.
Was it as we see it here today when it was first opened in 1929?
It's actually the same as it was in 1929. In fact, when Mr. Edison came here for the first time, he made a complete tour of inspection of this building. He examined the old instruments that he had worked with. He examined the chemicals here and there. He wanted to be sure that they weren't faked. And he turned to Mr. Ford and he says, you know, Henry, he says, you've made this place 99 9/10% perfect. And Mr. Ford wasn't satisfied with that. He wanted 100%. So he asked him, he says, what's that 0.1% that I left out? Edison says, you keep it too clean. He says, I never kept my place this clean.
What's your favorite story about Tom Edison?
Well, my favorite story, one was that Mr. Ford told me himself. Mr. Ford told me they were out on a camping trip one time, and it was him and Edison, Firestone, and John D. Rockefeller, the four of them were together. And they stopped to a gas station to get some gas. And they says to the attendant at the station, he says, check our car. He says, put some gas in and check the water. And so finally, Edison, he was always cracking jokes anyway, and he says to the station attendants, he says, I don't suppose you know us fellas. The fellow says, well, he says, how should I know you? He says, I see many people during the daytime. He says, I wouldn't know you. Well, he turned around, he says, this is Mr. Ford. He says, the guy that built this car. And the guy looked at him, and Mr. Ford turned right around. Yeah, and he says, this is Thomas Edison, the fellow that invented the electric light bulb. And then Edison came right back, and he says, this is Harvey Firestone, the guy that invented the tires that on that car. And John D. Rockefeller was sitting in the back seat. And by this time, the guy, he looked in the car, and he said, I suppose you're going to tell me that guy sat in the back seat of Santa Claus. And he said, but that they drove away. And he says, as far as they could see, the guy just stood there by the station and watched him. And he says, I bet he doesn't know to this day who we were.
Wonderful story. Let me thank you, Charles Natzel, a man who has been here at Menlo Park Laboratory at Greenfield Village in Dearborn, Michigan, since 1929.
For those who may be too young to remember the original John D. Rockefeller, he was famous for giving a dime to every young person he met, hence the Santa Claus reference, I believe. Okay, monitor moves on.
If there's but one strand of hair on top of your head, give it a break before it drops dead. Even a kid who's got more than his share should make extra sure he shampoos it with care. So pick up a tube of Breck Concentrate Shampoo. Cleans each strand so gently it's a hair saver for you. And the whole family will have hair that looks great, because Breck quality is in Breck concentrate. Sounds quite expensive? Then price it. You'll see how much can be saved when you buy quality. If you've a strand of your name, shampoo it with care. Try Breck concentrate. It cleans every hair.
On monitor next, Miss Connie Francis with another page.
A while ago, I was a lonely girl, without a goal or purpose in this world. I thought of life and made my plans to find myself a wealthy man, it's true.
Monitor Sports with Joe Garagiola.
A lot has been written about the problems of the professional golfer who spends a lot of time on the tour and finds that it can be a money-losing proposition. The problems that these men face are a genuine concern to the powers that be in golf. But recently, Golf Digest pointed out that the winners have a problem, too, when it comes to money. It's not that the purses aren't big enough, but it's the problem of what to tip a caddy, especially if you win the tournament. A few years ago, Arnold Palmer won the Masters and gave his caddy, Iron Man Avery, $1,500. It became public because when Arnie asked Mrs. Palmer to write out the check, she made a slight mistake. She wrote it out for $15,000. When she realized what she had done, the proper switch was made. Another thing that happened was that caddies came to expect bigger tips. In 1965, Gary Player won the United States Open and the $25,000 that went with it. He not only gave away the prize money to cancer research in junior golf, but he also tipped his caddy $2,000. It's reached the point where when Billy Casper won the Open last year and gave his caddy $2,000, nobody thought anything about it. Nobody, that is, but the golfers and the caddies. The PGA does have rules governing the payment of caddies. The rule says that a caddy fee for each event on the Pro Tour shall be $1 over the regular caddy fee for that course, with a $5 maximum. The rule also says that a tip should not exceed 5% of the golfer's winnings. It all sounds very simple, except that nobody really pays much attention to the rule. Golfers have a lot of different ideas on paying caddies. Dave Marr feels that caddies are being spoiled by large tips. He says, "I don't follow any set rule on paying caddies. I try to pay a caddy what I think he's worth, with a minimum of $10 a day." Bob Charles follows a set formula. He gives his caddy $10 a day and 3% of his purse. Charles says, "If I were ever to win the Masters, the U.S. Open, or the PGA, I might share my good fortune with a caddy. But I'd have to take into account the years I didn't win big purses and had to struggle. Any other kind of figuring wouldn't be fair to me or my family." That caddies have come to expect the big tips is itself a big part of the problem. Mike Suchak says, I once tipped a caddy $500, and he actually sneered at it. That experience has taught me to be more conservative with what I pay, not more liberal. Most golfers seem to agree that caddies are not much help during tournaments. It isn't that they can't be a help. It's just that the golfers can't take a chance on getting a helpful caddy. By the time the tournament starts, the golfer knows the course himself and doesn't have to rely on the caddy. Nobody really knows what the answer is, but the PGA is going to have to come up with some kind of solution. It becomes more and more obvious each year that there are certain golfers who are big money winners and a lot more who are struggling. The strugglers can't afford the tip the same way that the big money guys can. If they make a realistic rule and stick to it, the golfers and the caddies will both be happier. This is Joe Garagiola for Monitor Sports.
Hear Joe throughout the weekend on Monitor, weekdays too on NBC. Three days to go till Valentine's Day, but only 1 minute until the beginning of the next hour and the latest NBC Monitor News. Gene Rayburn here.
William Manchester, author of the controversial book, The Death of a President, will meet the press in a one-hour special tomorrow on the NBC network.